Punk's not dead, and neither is New Wave. Join Buzz and Ben on Static Rage, the Punk and New Wave Album Review Podcast.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to Static Rage. I am Ben. With me, as always, is Buzz. Tonight, we're doing something a little different because it is one of our favorite holidays. How are you doing tonight, Buzz?
I'm doing extremely well tonight, Ben, and I'm very excited to talk about this because I know there's people that are going to be looking at this going, what the fuck? So I think we'll explain it here in a little bit and then move on, but hopefully people will enjoy it. We'll see.
Yeah, we will definitely see. So tonight, if you have seen the thumbnail, you will see that we are doing the debut studio album by the Dubliners, A Drop of the Hard Stuff, released in 1967 on Major Minor label, had a runtime of 43 minutes and 7 seconds, produced by Scott. The band is Ronnie Drew, Luke Kelly, Barney McKinnon, Ciaran Bourque, and John Sheehan. And I probably mispronounced Ciaran
Bourque's name. It's Ciaran Bourque. That's fine.
Yeah. So, yeah. Why are we doing this, my man?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. So first off, I've always talked about how Luke Kelly is one of my favorite vocalists. And I feel like I talked about that when we did our compilation album, when you and a couple of other guys got together and talked about our favorite albums. I'm pretty sure I brought him up and no one knew who he was. And I mentioned we should probably do something with him in it. And the reason we're doing this is twofold. One, when this releases, it will be St. Patrick's Day. So this is kind of fitting for that. The other reason is I've talked to people before about how certain other types of music, like bluegrass, certain types of country, which we've covered, Irish folk in this situation, tends to be kind of punk without being punk. And despite the almost, I'm loath to say this, but I'm going to say it the best way I can perhaps reach other people here. Despite the seemingly grandpa-ish sound that's coming out of this, there's a lot going on musically with some of these words and lyrics, because a lot of these songs have been passed down from generation to generation, and a lot of these people grew up with it. And they do tend to be almost more punk in how they come across. So we'll hopefully talk about that tonight.
Definitely so. I mean, this is pretty much straight up traditional Irish folk music. You know, these are a lot of these. This is this is the first time that I've listened to this particular album, but it is not the first time that I've heard a lot of these songs, because, you know, in Irish traditional music, you will find it's kind of like the Great American Songbook, in that you will find that many people have done renditions of these songs through the years.
And that's kind of what you'll find out. If we do another Irish band, that's probably what'll happen. You might hear some songs that are overlapping, or, hey, I've heard this song before. So the reason this is called A Drop of the Hard Stuff, it's twofold. It's kind of a play on words. Yes, on the surface, it's talking about, you know, an allusion to hard liquor, specifically whiskey. The thing is, though, a lot of the songs on here, if you try to play them, they're not exactly easy to play. Like, some of them seem very simple, but the way the instrumentation goes into it, it takes a lot to do this. Every individual in this band is extremely talented. The thing that pops up a lot with other Irish bands is, not that other bands aren't capable, but they don't quite rise to the level that the Dubliners did. And perhaps some of that is marketing. Certainly a lot of times they will play things safe, as we will get to when we get to the first song on here. And that's kind of what got them popular, is they were kind of seen as like the safe Irish band for people outside of Ireland. Whereas we have bands like Wolf Tones, or there's a few other bands out there that do this too, but they got a little more edgy with it and a little more aggressive in their playing. The Dubliners didn't do that. They kind of made it to where, hey, even though the song might be anti a certain thing, we still want you to enjoy it because it's just a song. And that's something that this band has always done. I'm going to deviate just slightly for a minute, then we'll come back to talking about the album. Last year, when we did our Celtic punk set for March, we reviewed the Rumjacks. And in the song, An Irish Pub Song, there's a reference to Ronnie Drew. In fact, the line goes, "Who the hell is Ronnie Drew?" And I bring that up whenever I talk about people when it comes up with the Dubliners, because a lot of people that know the band, for some reason, don't know who Ronnie Drew is. And Ronnie Drew is the guy that started this band. This band is the reason that Irish folk music kind of got popular. Let's just be real about that. I know a lot of people might argue that one way or the other, but this is kind of what brought Irish folk music into the fold for people outside of Ireland.
I mean, I don't know enough about it to contest that, but I mean, they are, I would say, probably the quintessential band. I mean, you see that them and the Chieftains, and I haven't looked at when the Chieftains first started recording albums, but this is from 67. So, I mean, you know, when I started listening to the Chieftains in the 90s, they've been around for a long time, but I don't know if they've been doing it for 30 something years. And they very well could have been, but it's kind of like, you know, the closest contemporary thing that I can think of this that I have knowledge of is bluegrass, which you already referenced. And that is because it's, again, a lot of traditional songs that are passed down and done over and over again by the various bluegrass bands, you know, whether it's Bill Monroe and his bands, or Monroe Brothers, or several other bands that are escaping me, my mind at the moment. But it is a very similar thing. And part of the complexity that comes in this is the fact that almost all these guys are multi-instrumentalists. That's why I didn't list what they were playing. It's because they're all playing multiple instruments, and it's not like they're layering things, but you might have two guys playing banjo and two guys playing guitar on a track. So therefore the parts, because they're multi-instrumental parts, and if you don't know that, then it just sounds like a guitar and a banjo, and there's no way that you could play some of these songs either way and have them sound like they do on the album.
And that's something to bring up as well. Just the amount of talent going into this. I know when people bring up folk music or bluegrass, or in this case, Irish folk, there's always the idea of, oh, well, it's just a guitar. It's just a fiddle player. And it's like, there's a lot more going on to that. There really is. And it's not something people perhaps understand. But bluegrass is probably the easiest thing to connect for people that are listening to this right now that maybe have never heard this kind of music before, which bluegrass is a direct descendant of Irish, English, and Welsh folk music, kind of a conglomeration of all three. So that's something that if you listen to other bands such as the Chieftains, I know the Chieftains did a compilation album at one point where they got together with a bluegrass group and did a really good rendition a few times of some American songs, and it worked out really well. So that's just something to kind of think about when if you go listening to this. The fact that all of them play an instrument, the fact that all of them contribute, there's no one person in the center of the group like you have like in a lot of modern bands. It's everyone kind of has to pull their own weight and do this. And that is why I appreciate bands like this. You know, a lot of times in punk and metal, you might have like, oh, well, it's very guitar heavy, or it's bass driven, or hey, everyone remembers the singer or the bass player, but they don't remember the drummer and this other. And you don't have that with groups like this. Everyone's involved. Everyone's equally important. And it's always kind of felt like I'm that to me is more of a punk feeling than some other more modern bands might be.
I can see that. And I looked it up, and them and the Chieftains both started out in 62. So they're, you know, both contemporaries of each other. And it's very interesting that you bring that up about the multiple participation in the band, because almost everybody in the band is a vocalist. So you have different vocals, lead vocals on several of the tracks as they trade them off. And some of those singers are better than certain other ones. But there is not any drum and no bass on this.
at least not in the way that it would be on a punk album or a metal album or a pop album. So in a lot of spaces, the vocals are kind of staccato, meaning that they are keeping rhythm with the singing. And that is not unusual in the style of music, but it was something that I wanted to point out.
And that's really the takeaway to all this. I mean, I think we've kind of both hit the nail on the head, so to speak. You have everyone just essentially having more than one job. And that's what makes a good group. That's what makes people like this good. And this is when you, when we jump in here, why sometimes Ronnie Drew sings on some of the songs and why sometimes Luke Kelly sings some of the songs. When I talk to people about singing and how some people will go, well, I can't sing. Damn near everyone can sing. You just have to find out what you're good at. And the problem is, just because you like a particular kind of music doesn't mean you're good at singing that particular kind of music. This kind of helps solidify what I talk about when I bring that up. Other than that, before we jump in, just if you're not sure what to make of this, all I can say is it's very good. It doesn't really sound dated because a lot of these songs are way older than the 60s. I mean, some of these songs have been around for a while. And of course, when we go down this, we'll talk about it. But yeah, some of these songs have been around well into the previous century before they got recorded here. So I mean, this is not something that was written like 20 years ago before they started this. We'll discuss that as we go down. And
yeah, the only thing that I would add to that is it doesn't sound dated if you know this genre of music. Because I do think that for some people, just this style of music is going to sound dated. And so your experience of that may vary. But if you are in the habit of listening to any traditional music, I honestly don't really care what it is, whether it's Irish music or bluegrass or, Japanese folk, the equivalent of Japanese folk. If you listen to traditional music with traditional instruments, this will not sound dated, but if all you listen to is modern pop, country, rock, or rap, any of that stuff, then this will kind of sound dated because it's not the musical expression that you're used to.
Yeah, so this is just something to think about if people ever listen to this and go, well, man, this sounds like an older song. Yeah, it's going to. I could take a lot of these songs now and Ben and I could get a few instruments and start playing, and guess what? It's going to sound like it's going to be old. And I like that. I really do, because it doesn't make it seem dated. It makes it seem timeless at that point. That means at any time, any of us could do this. It could be now. It could have been, 80 years ago. It could have been 100 years ago. Maybe it's going to be in the future, whatever. There's something about that where you can kind of capture a spirit of when it was written and have a deeper understanding.
Yeah. But when I say that, I mean, it also is, pardon, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it's also in a way timeless too, which was what you were going for when you were first singing, does it sound dated? Because this isn't like rockabilly per se, and I really like rockabilly, but rockabilly sounds like it came from a very specific time and place. And even modern practitioners are hearkening back to that, but they're connecting their music to that time and place, so it sounds of that era. And I guess you could say that this is doing that, but because the era is so much longer and so much further away that it gives it a timeless quality.
Sure. Other than that, the production of this is great. I mean, it for the time period it came down out in, and I know the version I listened to was a cleaned up one where they went in and made the and made everything a little bit better. But it's so well produced. I've heard the original recording and it's not that bad. The one last thing I'm going to bring up before we jump into this is certain bands, the Dubliners are one of these. There's nothing wrong with their studio albums, but I'm going to encourage everyone out here right now, if you're listening to this, listen to a lot of their live stuff. The cool thing about this band and some of the other bands we might talk about this month are that they really do a lot better live, because you get a lot of energy. They interact with the crowd a lot, and sometimes they do things that they don't do on their studio albums. So I say use a studio album like this as a roadmap before you go off and venture out and get into certain things that I would argue might even be a little bit better. And that's going to be my spiel before we start.
Well, right on. I do think that this is one of those styles that lends itself very well to live albums, and I'm not a live album guy. I'm a live concert guy, but if I'm going to sit at my home and listen to music, a recorded album that is a live, there are some exceptions, I need to say, that just sound fucking fantastic. But for the most part, I would rather listen to a studio album in my home or my car or something like that than a live album, because you're not going to get the crowd experience. And usually, without them going in and doing some post-production trickery, the music's not going to sound as good. Because usually the instruments are just slightly out of tune. They're either playing below tempo or above tempo of the recording. Which, and again, when you're live and you're in the crowd and you're feeling that energy, is fine. And you don't, you know, it's just part of the experience. But if I'm like listening to it at home, it's not exactly my thing. But I am going to trust Buzz on this as we go forward into this month and do some live recordings.
Always remember, live albums are going to have that problem. But, you know, you always have that possibility of, oh, well, the crowds are getting too loud. I have to tell everyone listening to this right now, a lot of bands we're going to talk about really, really, really do sound better live. With that said, I think we said everything we need to before we jump in. So, Ben, do you want to start off or do you want me to do this?
Go ahead.
So let's just kick it off and go right in the first song. The song is called The Seven Drunken Nights, but as they say, and they say this every time, on even on their live recordings, the song is called The Seven Drunken Nights, but they're only allowed to sing five of them, so here it goes. That is because when the song came out, it's a very raunchy song, despite what it sounds like. It sounds, you know, very, very dated, kind of sounds very, very safe. The song is about a guy whose wife is fucking cheating on him. And he comes home drunk every night. And the first verse has to do with something of, oh, there's a horse out here. It's not my horse. What's going on? And his wife tells him, hey, it's a pig. And he believes her. And then it goes on. And he keeps finding other things in this house that are not his. And she tells him, no, you're drunk. It's this. My mother gave it to me. Eventually what happens is after the fifth night, this is where it normally stops. Because he's talking about a head being in the bed. And she's like, no, it's a baby boy. And my mother gave it to me, and he's too drunk to realize what's going on. Six and seven have to do with your genitals, and it's goddamn hilarious, and I really wish they'd have a recording of it. I have not yet heard a recording of this by them. I know there's one that exists. It needs to happen, though. It's fucking hilarious, and I want to hear it. But the thing is, it's a very raunchy song when you start listening to it. So all of a sudden, we went from being a very safe band to, wait, are they really talking about this? Now, the reason they don't put these last two verses in is because when this album came out, they were not allowed to. There's the studio that they worked for or they worked at was essentially telling them, if you do this, you're done. It's not going to get aired. We're going to make sure no one ever books you again. So they were like, okay, fine. So it's kind of a joke in a way, because even though they can't do the seven verses, it makes The Seven Drunken Nights even more funny at that point. So it's definitely worth a listen through at least once. Look up the other lyrics. You'll find out exactly what I'm talking about, because it's pretty humorous. As we go down, The Galway Races is the first time Luke Kelly sings on a live album. And I will say it again, Luke Kelly is one of my favorite vocalists. If you've never heard him, you need to go look him up.
He was by far the best vocalist out of this band.
I would agree. I'd still put him up pretty high. I've heard some of the stuff he can do, or could do.
Well, no, I mean, that's not like, that was not me like downplaying it. That was me agreeing. And like, I haven't really thought where I would put him amongst vocalists of all time, because I have not listened to enough of his stuff, but the difference between him and the other vocalists in the band is very stark.
Oh, sure. Sure. So with Ronnie Drew's voice, he has for those of you who've never heard this, Ronnie Drew has a very gravelly, low, grumbly voice. And in a way, it kind of started as a joke, because when he started doing the vocals for this, he had a very deep baritone. And it's not what people were used to hearing. Well, funny enough, some of the songs, i.e. the Seven Drunken Knights, when they do Willy Awalia later on, the Zoological Gardens, his voice does really, really good singing those particular songs, because as we've talked about before, there's certain times where you're doing a vocal part and it sounds better if it's not pretty. It sounds better if it's not cleaned up. It sounds better if it sounds like an angry old man or a drunk old man or someone that's done with life, better than what someone with a quote unquote better voice could do.
Yeah. I mean, at least some authenticity to it.
Oh yeah.
And actually just sound like it's just somebody at a bar telling you the story.
True. And that's why I like the back and forth with this, because you'll hear a few songs or a few tracks from Ronnie, and then you'll hear a few more from Luke, and it does go back and forth. And it's clearly not the same band, or it's not the different band, but it's almost like it could be a different band.
Yeah, and, yeah, if you didn't know, I could see where you might think it was a different band, for sure.
And there's, I think, at least one track that Karen Burke sings on this one. But again, depending on who's doing the vocals, it almost sounds like a different band. So another thing, big plus for me. But the Galway Races is a traditional song. It's kind of like a nonsensical song. That's why I think it works so well. And from there, we go to The Old Alarm Clock, which is one of my favorite songs on here. The Old Alarm Clock is essentially making fun of British law enforcement. The premise is this guy is being accused of having an alarm clock because it's a bomb. And they can't figure out that it's actually literally just an alarm clock. So then he gets arrested. The judge hits him with charges of wearing the green, which, for those that don't know, for the longest time it was legal to wear green in Ireland because it was seen as a rebel color. So if you wore it, they could actually arrest you for it. It's a very humorous song. It's worth listening to. I wouldn't say it's the best song out there, but it's enjoyable to hear. There are two reels on this album. And for those that don't know what a reel is, it's just music. But usually what you'll have is you'll have someone playing a fiddle as well. And they're doing this, and it's kind of the mainstay. A lot of times bands will do this live to kind of give their voices a little bit of a rest while they just play in the background. Of course, the cool thing about this is if you've ever been to a pub and you have live music where there's not a band being paid, it's just people coming in with music, sitting in a corner playing, that's kind of what reels do for you. They kind of give you that feeling. As we go down, The Rising of the Moon's would one of my favorite songs. I don't like the pacing of it. I wish it was a little bit faster because I have heard other versions, but Luke Kelly does an amazing job on vocals on that. And of course, McCafferty is a very good one as well. Again, it's one of those old songs about, essentially it's a soldier being punished for not doing his job, and he shoots one of his officers and he shoots the wrong one. It's an amusing song for it. What works with that though, is because again, we're going back to Ronnie Drew on that song, and it sounds like someone that's angry and annoyed and is done with life. And Ronnie Drew has that voice to it. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Pretty much the next seven tracks I like. Willy Awalia is a song I heard as a young kid. It's a murder ballad, I guess is the best way to say it. It's kind of like done in the same way that the London Bridge is falling down. If you actually understand what the song is talking about, it's the same kind of thing. It sounds like a very happy song, but then this lady in the woods kills her kid with a penknife, and it's like, what the fuck just happened? So it's always interesting to hear that one, but that's actually a favorite they play a lot. The next one I want to talk about is The Traveling People. So Luke Kelly was an activist at the time, and for what people don't know, the Traveling People are gypsies. It's the Irish equivalent to that. He was very supportive of travelers. And it's kind of a ballad done to this, which he didn't write. It was written by Ewan McColl, and he was an English performer. Essentially, what's happened is it's his love letter to saying, hey, I'm with you, blah, blah, blah. If you remember at the beginning of this podcast, I said a lot of Irish folk has correlation with punk music. Well, here it is. This is a very politically charged song. It doesn't have any negatives to it, but it's the whole, hey, I'm standing with these people. these marginalized people, I'm standing with them. And I'm not one of them, but I'm singing for them because they can't be up here doing this right now. But it's a very good rendition. I've heard a lot of other versions of it. I don't really like anyone else's, which I tried hard, but yeah, it's just his version is, I think, the best. When you get down to the Limerick Rake, it's Luke Kelly a cappella doing this song, and it's enjoyable. Again, it's a nonsensical kind of song, but it's very fun, and it kind of fits to his persona, because apparently that is what he was like when he was alive. He was very, very fun, very a joy to be around, and he could also sing. And he was one of these people, he didn't look down at anyone. So it's amusing that they got him to do this. I won't go too much much more details, but the last two, the Black Velvet Band and Patty on the Railway, it's a good way to close this album out. Everyone knows the Black Velvet Band. Everybody knows that song. If you listen to Irish music at all, that's probably one of the most overplayed Irish songs out there. I remember it as a kid. I think pretty much anyone that grew up with any kind of Irish folk remembers it. And of course, Patty on the Railway is a very fun song because it can be sped up. This version of this album is slowed down. There's two things I'm going to say about that. One, I've heard Luke Kelly go a lot faster with it. And two, the Pogues actually covered it and did it very, very fast and did a good job with it. So I would say if you like that song, look up the Pogues version as well. And I've talked pretty much about the entire album, I think.
You did, pretty much. The only thing that I will add to that, Patty on the Railway is very interesting because that is also one of the crossover songs, because it's about the railways and the construction thereof. So that has American folk roots too. So a lot of American folk people have done that as well. I really quite enjoy most of the stuff that Buzz already mentioned, like Seven Drunken Nights. That is a derivation of an old Scotch Scottish folk song, which I've never heard. I've only ever heard this version. So I'm kind of wondering if in the reconfiguration, knowing some Scottish people, I'm betting that it's just as dirty and filthy as this version, but I don't know for sure that if it's not. And then the Black Velvet Band, I always love when these songs refer to Australia as Van Diemen's Land. So, just puts a smile on my face every time.
So with that in mind, I kind of wanted to poke Ben to listen to this, because I do have that, you know, I go back and forth with the whole, hey, Luke Kelly this, Luke Kelly that. So I'm glad that I finally got Ben to listen to it. I would encourage all of you to go listen to him. I think he's an awesome vocalist. It's just, I can't say enough good things about him, and you know, God bless him, man. Just amazing, amazing vocalist.
Yeah, beautiful voice.
With that said, is there anything else you want to add?
No, I don't think that there's anything else that really needs to be added to this. I mean, just keep in mind that if you are coming to this from listening to our podcast and the stuff that we normally talk about, this it's not even proto-punk. I mean, you can make some connections to the politics and everything, but folk was fairly political anyway, as is bluegrass and most what I will call true forms of music, because they're reflecting people's everyday lives, and everything is political, whether we like to admit it or not. And so you're not going to have, not to say that there is not energy on this, but it's not going to have the same kind of energy. And you know, from 67 looking onward, when this was released, that you can't really even see punk from, I mean, they probably could, but if you're just looking at this album, you're not really going to find a whole lot of punk here. That's the only caveat, I would say. But with that said, I am ready to grade this thing. You are.
I am very ready to grade it. So I'm going to just go ahead and jump out and say, normally I do like a two grade thing, and I'm going to do that here again. Usually the first grade is just musically. The second grade is how punk or aggressive it is. I'm going to change that up a little bit. Let me start with the first one. Musically, everything is on point. Everyone here is very talented. They're very good at what they do. even if you're not into this kind of music, you will, if you enjoy music at all, you would probably agree this is a very well practiced band. Everything they did is on point. The way the production value goes in, at least on the version we listened to, it was very well done. And again, you don't hear anyone's voice cracking. You don't have any of the strangeness that you get from like modern music when it comes to someone's trying to do something different. It's just them being their raw selves and saying, this is who we are, and that's it. And for that, it gets an A+ for me. When it comes to my second grade, this is normally when I say, hey, this is how punk or aggressive this song or this band is. The way that I look at this is, with this band specifically, I don't look at them as a very politically motivated band, because they're not. They really did try to get people encompassed into listening to it. While they might have had a few politically charged songs, they were never aggressive. Some of that's on purpose. Some of that is the people that they were doing the recordings with. Some people, like in Luke Kelly's case, when he wanted to show support for marginalized people, he was like, I'm gonna sing this song and be done with it, and everything I need to say will be done here in this song, and then that's it. And because of that, I'm going to give this an A, and it has nothing to do with it being, are there more better politically charged bands from Ireland out there? Yeah, there are. There's a lot better ones out there, but this one, it's kind of like the Ramones. It's kind of like when we did the Ramones, how they kind of get that legacy boost, and it's like they were the first in quotations to do what they did musically. This band really just kind of encompassed all of that, and it made it safe without being safe, I guess is the best way I can think to explain it. So yeah, that's why it gets a solid A for me on that.
Yeah, and it's very, I mean, I can kind of, I guess, understand, at least for the time that this came out, why they were not super duper political. Of course, there was a civil rights movement going on in Ireland at this time, famously, but this is before like the troubles of the 70s or, and decades before the troubles of the 90s. So a lot of the political violence that we associate and that we've talked about with other Irish punk acts, because they're more closer to our timeline of the modern day, they have experienced those. And not saying that there wasn't violence and outbreaks of violence in Ireland going on even then, but I can kind of understand why, at least for this album, they hadn't really taken a hardline stance one way or the other. I only give one grade. Everything Buzz said about this musically is very true. I mean, some people might nitpick about the one guy's voice, but I'm not going to, because it serves the purpose of the song. That's all you can ask any singer to do. I mean, yeah, we all wish we could sing as beautifully as Kelly, but most of us can't. But you can serve the song, and that is done. I'm going to give this an A-, so just slightly come in below Buzz. I really enjoyed this. This is something that, as I was sitting in the office today doing work, while my, across the hall, my one of my bosses and contemporaries was talking about how her daughters are going to do traditional Irish dance on the St. Patrick's Day next week. So it was very fitting and very awesome. And if you like Irish traditional music, or even if you just like folk music or anything, you should give this a listen. Because the musicianship, and, you know, if you want to really dig into the history to a greater extent than what Buzz went into, you can. It's there, and you can find multiple variations of these songs, and each one is going to give you a little something different, because the great thing about traditional songs is that they give you a language to communicate that everybody knows, but the way you're doing them also speaks to the contemporary.
And I think that pretty much sums up just about everything. Just to add on what Ben said, some of us can sound like Luke Kelly, but we'll keep that to ourselves until another day.
Indeed. Well, all right, man. What are we going to do next? Oh, we did say whether we buy this. Yes.
Yeah, buy it right now. Go buy it. Just yes. In fact, just the first three albums, go ahead and buy. I think that's obvious enough.
Yes.
So next, what are we doing next? Well, after this drops, it'll be St. Patrick's Day. So we talked about the Troubles. Why don't we do a band that got started in the 90s in Ireland? It's not the Cranberries. We're not doing that.
I mean, that's an awesome album. We could do that.
It's an awesome album, but we could, but we're not going to. Just like we're not going to do U2 ever on this fucking show. Ever. No, ever.
In the name of love. I agree
with you. So yeah, we're never going to do that here. There's a cool little band that came out of Glasgow, Scotland, of all places, that does really good politically charged rebel music. And we'll talk about that when we come back. But yeah, we're going to, that's your hint for next week. And while we normally do studio albums, it's going to have to be a live one. And the reason for that is with this band, their recorded stuff is okay, but my God, their live stuff is amazing. So we're going to be talking about that. So that's next week.
Right on. Enjoy yourselves on this fine holiday. And we'll catch you next time.
And as this is releasing on St. Pat's, just kidding, Filch you.